passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear are opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Well, hello, and welcome to Rewind to Dynamite on Wednesday night, September the 28th. John Pollock here, along with Wei Ting. Hello, Wei.
Hey, John, what's going on?
It's it is another evening for us to discuss what is going on everywhere. And actually, off the top, I would like to give all of our well wishes to any listeners that might be affected by Hurricane Ian, whether you're in Florida or any other surrounding parts affected by the hurricane. Obviously, that is massive news, and we are thinking of everyone that might be affected. And, you know, reportedly, even some that were not going to be able to make it to Philadelphia tonight, and Tony Khan even noting that they were, you know, allowing those to stay home if they were affected this week, but no names that we are aware of that necessarily were not traveling.
And all the people affected on the East Coast as well, in Canada.
Yes, absolutely. So want to make mention of that off the top, and we will be getting into tonight's Dynamite. We also have some news to discuss. Off the top, though, I just want to make note of a change that we have made to the Post-Wrestling Cafe. Do you want to inform people, Wei, of this change that has been, I think, a long time coming and is going to make it a lot easier for those that maybe want to jump on board, and it also makes it easier for us to alert people of what time of the month that they can sign up, and you don't have to game the system and figure out with a calendar when the best time is to sign up for the Post-Wrestling Cafe.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, those of you guys like listening to us, you probably often hear us say, hey, now's the best time to sign up for the Post-Wrestling Cafe. It's the start of the month. You get your best value. Well, I mean, we don't have to do that anymore, because whenever you sign up right now on Patreon, they have instituted a new billing model that allows the recurring date for when you're charged to be on the same day that you sign up. So, for instance, you can sign up at the end of the month, like right now on September the 28th. You will get your full month's worth from the 28th forward. So you won't be charged again until October 28th. So there's no real need to wait until the first anymore. You can really sign up at any time, which helps us because we provide, like, you know, content on like a weekly basis, or at least like a, you know, every other day, basically. So it makes it less awkward for us to have to promote, hey, sign up right now. And makes it less awkward for everybody if they're looking to sign up towards the end of the month.
Yeah, for those that might be considering jumping on board, we just did a Ask Away show. We have a minimum of 3 bonus shows out each week. So this week, over 90 minutes answering your questions. Thursday, we'll have MC Later, and then Friday, Rewind to SmackDown. So you can get all of those shows with an immediate sign up. And we'll have plenty of other shows coming up in October, including Bound for Glory coverage, New Japan's Declaration of Power, and all the other regular staples of the Post-Wrestling Cafe. So we will bang you over the head with that repeatedly. But I want to make note of that change so you don't have to be timing things out. If you want to jump on board, if you enjoy the extra content, great. Maybe you are sick of us and will only want to stick on board for a month. But check it out. We put a lot of work into the Post-Wrestling Cafe. Look at that. Look at those beautiful faces.
It's also all available on YouTube as well, of course, for those of you who prefer video, at video.postwrestling.com. You can join at the link right there. You have to sign up to your YouTube account, but you get all the bonus shows the same way, just in video form.
Yes. $6 US a month gets you in the door, and that gives you access to all of the bonus shows. And then there are higher tiers you can go, and all of that information is available there.
$8 on YouTube, just to clarify.
Yes. All right. Let's chat a bit about some news that is going on. We're going to start off with Malachi Black, who responded the other day on Instagram Live to discussing his status with AEW, because it has been very muddied, I would say, ever since All Out, and where he gave what appeared to be a goodbye to the live crowd. And then later on that evening, it was Will Washington from the Grapsity podcast who asked Tony Khan during the press conference about what is the status of Malachi Black. What did that mean? Tony Khan could not comment on it. And since that time, Malachi Black did put out a statement not all that long ago stating that he did ask for his release. Now, later in that same statement, he referred to his release in quotation marks. So, yes, this has led to people questioning what his status was with AEW. And, you know, obviously, you know, he has also divulged. He is going through a lot of personal issues, and I think we all want to respect those issues that he is going through. But, you know, he was very upset about what has been reported about him. He called into question the length of his contract that is out there, stating it's not 5 years. Well, that term, the only reason that length is known is because Tony Khan divulged that when he was on Busted Open Radio back over the summer, stating that Black has nearly 5 years left on his deal. So that strictly comes from Tony Khan's lips of the length of the deal. But he is not done with AEW. He states he is going to be gone maybe for weeks, maybe for months, but he's going to be back. There is no controversy. Now, it has been noted, and by himself, he had asked for his release. He stated that. So, you know, this has brought about, I think, a lot of tension of, you know, talent with how they are covered. And I think it is worth, like, having a discussion on, like, there is overall, I think, like, a lack of transparency. And obviously, I'm coming it from one angle of it, from the media side, and talent is not required to disclose anything they want. But I do feel like there is some middle ground where there can be, you know, the status of a performer can be commented on by a company, where basic facts should be transparent. I don't think it has to be Fort Knox when it comes to every last detail, and there's nothing. And you have, you know, I will see a lot of people that will always complain about reports where it is sources that are unnamed. Folks, that's not on the media side. There is no one in a reporter's side that is clamoring for to speak off the record or to speak on background. That is on the performers. This is an industry where it is so considered a taboo to speak to the media that I just feel overall like we're so behind in forms of other industries. And yes, you are going to have people that are not going to be able to speak on the record. They are topics. There may be very important news to come out that someone does not want to attach their name to. But at the same time, like, I think some of these companies could do a bit better job when it comes to just answering basic questions. So it's not just this eternal friction back and forth. But that also comes with the territory. There is going to be dissension between talent that are covered and are not going to want aspects of their professional careers covered. But this sort of was a large group of thoughts that I had coming out of this video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to, you know, be a part of a larger sort of discourse right now going on between you know, a lot of contentiousness between the media and professional wrestlers and people speaking to the media that are that may be professional wrestlers internally, specifically as it relates seemingly, like, you know, with AEW's roster. I can understand, you know, maybe the frustration if you're a wrestler and if you're sensing that people are talking about something that might not be true. However, like, in this particular instance, like, like you laid out the facts, John, you know, there's information out there that has been divulged by Tony Khan or by Malachi Black himself that we believed to be factual at the time. So I definitely respect like somebody not wanting us to, like, speculating about his mental health, for instance, like all that stuff. I understand, like, that's probably not great to hear, you know, if you're somebody.
No, but again, Wade, like, I think we have to be very careful when we just say like the media. Like, what does that entail? I think like there are reporters out there you respect. There's reporters maybe you don't respect out there. That's every fan consumer's prerogative. But when you're is his mental health being discussed by these reporters that you follow? Because I'm sure not hearing that. Is this from fans online and we're just conflating social media with media? I mean, that's, obviously it's not ideal. And like, mental health is going to be off limits. Like, I'm not going into that territory at all. But there are going to be aspects of your, like, contract status and such. Like, you might not want that out there, but that stuff is going to get reported on.
Yeah, it's fair game. And especially in an industry like professional wrestling, where, you know, like, historically, you have to kind of sift through so much of what's out there to find the truth. Speculating is part of, unfortunately, the game when you don't have, you know, clear upfront messaging from the sources themselves. I could see the frustration, but like a lot of it, unfortunately, is just kind of part of like the nature of like this sort of business. All that said, like, you know, part of his messages or in this stream was addressing people who were sending him death threats.
Yeah. And that's completely bullshit.
Unacceptable.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that aspect is like, I understand having such a negative reaction and you sort of just lump in everyone together when it's that extent that you are receiving death threats, which is just, I mean, I don't even know how you could possibly, address that in any meaningful way when that's the response that you are getting from some people. And that's going to, you know, it's some people can just scoff at like such an extreme reaction to that. That's when you're going through something and that's something you wake up and get in your inbox or tweet it at you. That's alarming. And
it calls more to, I think, you know, the unhealthy, oftentimes tribalism that exists right now with, you know, rival companies. And that's a rivalry that the promoters themselves are willing to buy into and have really fanned the flames up in order to get extra attention. So I there's no excuse for that sort of online behavior. And anybody who is engaging in something like that, we should all as a community shut that down immediately. At the same time, I'm not really surprised to see like people that, you know, are so quick to defend every single Thursday, these sort of ratings wars, getting to that point where they might be sending death threats to a wrestler for wanting to quit, for instance. It's ridiculous, but man, it's like, it's, you know, I think in every fandom you have like, you know, this unfortunate, really kind of dark side to it. But, you know, it's part of a larger discussion that I see out there right now. And like you said, John, I think it's sort of in human nature for like, if you're Malakai Black, to lump the media as one group, just as like it might be, you know, for us to, you know, sometimes lump listeners into one group if like we get negative, you know, feedback of sometimes from somebody when that might represent a small part. I want this guy to just, you know, be healthy and happy in whatever he's doing. But at the same time, you know, reporters kind of have a job to do. And part of like discussing a man's contract is nothing at all to like something I think he should get personally offended by.
And again, just going back to his own words, like he is stating, I was just taking time off and it's no conspiracy. I mean, in your own statement, you said you asked for your release. Those were your words. So, you know, you have to essentially, like, you are almost contradicting yourself at that point. So I believe in it, you know, this comes off the heels of a Dave Meltzer reporting that apparently Tony Khan has just made an edict. There are not going to be any releases when it comes to, obviously, Malakai Black, for Buddy Matthews is not going to be a case where anyone's going to be let out of their contracts early. So I'm sure that is a factor in all of this as well. And I think number one is the priority you stated is Malachi Black getting into a good space, both mentally and physically. I mean, he has talked about an ailing back injury that he has been dealing with as well. So I think that is his number one priority is his health. And then hopefully, you know, they revisit and they can have an amicable relationship from there.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, this is that wild story from a few weeks ago from the Hollywood Reporter about the potential, and I put that in capital letters, potential, merger down the road of Warner Brothers Discovery and NBC Universal. Well, this was reported a couple of weeks ago that the earliest they could even begin negotiations would not be until April of 2024, but enough, you know, significant people have been discussing this as a potential outcome, which would be a gigantic merger of media giants. Well, David Zaslav, who is a name that continually comes up in shows like ours, the chairman and CEO of Warner Brothers Discovery, this was through Variety today, held a company-wide town hall meeting that was beamed out via Zoom. I hope that imagine having buffering issues if you're like Warner Brothers Discovery on a town hall Zoom call. I mean, that would not be a good sign, right? To his 40,000 employees, that would be a daunting Zoom call. Imagine say 40,000 like windows up.
That would be a big upgrade of plan. I feel that I feel like that's beyond the Zoom limit for most.
God, imagine. Yeah. So. And he essentially told the employees in this 75-minute session, we are not for sale. We have everything we need to be successful. Zaslav noted that TNT, TBS, CNN, Discovery, Food Network, HGTV, TLC, and other linear channels under the Warner Brothers Discovery roof reach some 30 million U.S. TV households every day. He noted that linear marketing and promotional muscle across internal platforms were crucial to the recent successful launches of Elvis, Don't Worry, Darling, and HBO's much-anticipated House of the Dragon. Moreover, Warner Brothers TV has... Okay, they're doing great. That's what they're trying to summarize here. But I mean, again, this story was at the earliest they could negotiate is 2 years from now. And I'm always going to default whenever there are talks of these major, you know, company altering deals. I go back to the playbook of Zuffa back when there was early reporting of a potential sale, and they swore up and down to their employees that they were not for sale, and boom, they woke up one day and they were sold. So I don't know if you can always take these things as concrete or not. At the very earliest, this is years away, but certainly would have a seismic shift in the television industry. But also, this is a story that, I mean, there's just so much speculation attached to it. But at least there is a public comment by the head of Warner Brothers Discovery denying this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you said, John, like, I don't know if you can ever trust anything from a corporate head of a, you know, publicly traded company. Every sort of single piece of messaging to the media is in some way, you know, done to reflect whatever, you know, stock activity there may
and company morale like that. I'm sure, yeah. Warner Brothers Discovery has gone through some tumultuous periods over the last year with this merger and all of the financial cutbacks. The last thing you want is this lingering story that, mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably best to address it and give people a peace of mind, whether this brings that peace of mind or not. I mean, that's to be determined.
Yeah, but it's an unfortunate position. I do have some empathy for, you know, Zaslav, because, well, he could be telling the truth, really. They could not be
can you imagine all these Batgirl fans that are just spamming his inbox? Want to see this movie?
Oh, goodness, yeah. Apparently, there's, like, some leaked footage out there. But anyway, regardless.
Have you seen Elvis?
I have not, no. Good?
It's awesome. I watched it over the weekend. It's really good.
Okay.
I'm not even a big Elvis fan, but this movie, I found it captivating.
It sounds fun. I will put that on the list. But, you know, obviously from a wrestling perspective, we look towards whether or not, you know, there's an AEW WWE connection to it all. And like you said, John, maybe it's still a bit early to, you know, even entertain that, even if he didn't put this statement out.
Yeah, I think it's worth at least, you know, addressing this because, I mean, mm-hmm. This could be something. This if something like this went through, it's an unbelievably massive story and goes well beyond pro wrestling. Shawn Michaels was doing some media for the Royal Rumble. I guess the pre-sale began today. The on sale is this week for the Alamo Dome in January. So he was interviewed by My San Antonio. And he talked a little bit about sort of the state of NXT and their recruitment process. He told the outlet, "We are still reaching out to other people with experience that have wrestled on the independent scene or been out in Japan or in other companies. That is something NXT will continue to do in the future. Nothing is off the table. We simply want to continue to find people that are just as passionate about the WWE product as we are." And he went on to describe his role with the company and relationship with Paul Levesque. He said that Hunter trusts me quite a bit, and I have sort of a great deal of freedom to do what I think is best, the best thing for NXT and our talent. I can't speak ill of Vince or any of the other people. They've all been good to me over the years. Goes on to say, I don't find myself having to ask him, referring to Hunter, a lot of questions or if that is okay to do, or what do you think of this? He's given me a great deal of freedom, which I appreciate. The good thing is we're best friends and we're going to talk all the time, but 9 times out of 10, we're on the same page. And he clarified that he has been a vice president for about a year to a year and a half. And it was just recently he was promoted to senior vice president, and his roles will be leading both NXT and whatever NXT Europe is going to be. So Shawn Michaels is in a pretty significant position at the developmental level now, pretty much overseeing the your two NXT brands that exist, and I guess will be the point person for NXT Europe as well. So a little clarity there from Shawn Michaels, but also noting the fact that it sounds like their recruitment process, it will have more of kind of a broader vision than we've seen over the last year, where it's largely been contained to these camps that they've run and the NIL program. That independent talent is something that they are going to be seeking out.
Mm-hmm. The sense I got from some of these words is that maybe, you know, with the past version of NXT or the PC that we've seen is maybe still being somewhat retained, but slowly shifting more towards maybe the older model for Black and Gold, which almost seemed to exclusively like hire independent wrestling talent. It just seems like we're getting maybe, you know, trying to find a middle ground between the two philosophies. It also tells me exactly like maybe how involved Shawn is with the whole system right now. NXT right now really does seem to be his baby. And it's, you know, obviously a synergy with Triple H, his best friend, as he says, you know, working up top in the main roster, that it's probably an even better ideal for what they set out for with the idea of 2.0. And that is, you know, a direct translation from NXT towards the main roster. Like the Shawn Vince relationship, as Shawn seems to describe it in this quote, seemed to be a bit more difficult than obviously now, you know, with him and Hunter being a lot more aligned in terms of philosophy and vision.
Yeah. I mean, when you see that, you know, line in there that 9 times out of 10, we see things the same way, I think actually it's very healthy when you don't agree on everything, that you do have slight changes. You don't want to be so diametrically opposed that it's, you know, a square peg in a round hole. But I agree with you. I think that these two, I think they largely have very similar views, and you have, again, establishing this pipeline of NXT to the main rosters that is a fluid one, and seeing talent develop that are going to make that hopefully seamless transition up into the main roster. But the last thing Paul Levesque needs is NXT on his plate weekly. Like, he should be delegating NXT to someone that you can have that trust in. And certainly it seems like Shawn Michaels is that person that he has tasked with that. Raw ratings from Monday, they did 1,674,000 viewers and a 0.45 in the demo. So this week they finished sixth on cable behind the New York Giants and Dallas Cowboys game. Did you catch up on the football game on Tuesday morning? Did you go back and watch?
You know, I think I might catch up on that after Elvis.
Oh,
that
okay.
On the list too.
Well, there you have it. Yeah. Well, this game aired on ABC, ESPN, and then the Manning cast was also running the simulcast on ESPN2, which featured Pat McAfee as one of the guests. And across those platforms, 19.3 million viewers watching this football game. So a big, big game. But Raw was up slightly this week. They beat Grand Slam last week in all of the demos, but were very close in 18 to 34. 201,000 for Raw, 200,000 for Dynamite last Wednesday. So the audience dropped 11% throughout the show. 50 plus was the only sizable drop in hour three, falling 17%. In Canada, Canada is not only did they have the football game going on, but the Jays are red hot right now. They did over 1.3 million viewers. It's not just the Jays that are in this playoff race. You had Aaron Judge of the Yankees playing the Jays. So I think he just hit home run number 61 tonight, Way.
Is that supposed to be good?
He's tying Roger Maris's record. It's fascinating to watch this. Like, everyone is glued to Aaron Judge surpassing like Roger Maris. It's like Barry Bonds doesn't exist. It's like Mark McGwire doesn't exist.
Hold on a second. So what was the old record? What was the Barry Bonds record?
Bonds hit like 70.
So they're negating that now? Like that's been wiped
it's,
from
it's
the
still
books?
The record, but everyone's treating this like 61 as like this big number that he's running. Oh, like, this would have been a big record 30 years ago, but it was like this record's been beaten.
But is it because it's the clean record now? Is that what we're going by?
I mean, it's the cleanest.
Have we tested Roger Maris? Have we checked his blood samples? Maybe
I don't know. I don't know what if there was any kind of blood doping in 1961 or any kind of chemical enhancement for one Roger Maris. But you should also watch 61. That's another great movie.
I got a pretty.
I'm
long
giving
list.
You a list because I know of all the free time that you have. Anyway, Jays and Yankees did a monster number on Monday. So Raw was down 17% of viewers, but up 6% in the demo up here on Sportsnet 360. So that was the Raw number. NXT did 660,000 viewers, a 0.16 in the demo. So this was odd. It was like their lowest audience since mid-August, but their highest demo since early August. So just very different trends here for viewership and the demo. And again, for a taped show, this was one of their largest demos in like well over a month. So once again, these taped episodes, it absolutely does not matter. And sometimes these are the most random of fluctuations that they receive. So anyway, a recovery in 18 to 34 as well for NXT. And I have to say, it was not the most compelling NXT episode, unless you were at the edge of your seat for the pub brawl between Gallus and Briggs and Jensen, which I know, Way, you wanted to talk a lot about, but we have a lot to get to, so we're not going to have time to break down the pub brawl. Battle of the Belts 4. Are you excited for this? Next Friday night, it will be another four-hour night of pro wrestling with 2 hours of SmackDown, Rampage, and then Battle of the Belts is going to air at 11 p.m. Eastern. They're doing two nights in Washington, D.C. next week. They'll do Dynamite on Wednesday, and then Friday they're doing the Rampage Battle of the Belts combo. So we can get ahead of ourselves because you will be covering these 4 hours because I was planning that night. I will be doing Bound for Glory and doing a cafe show afterwards covering Bound for Glory. So between us, we will be covering over 7 hours of professional wrestling that night.
Well, who needs the weekend? Because we got Extreme Rules that weekend too, don't we?
It's Extreme Rules the next night, yeah.
Yeah. So, it'll be me and Kate doing a 4 hour duty for that particular week while John covers Impact Wrestling, which will probably be a 3.5 at least hour show.
If you include the pre-show. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, lots of wrestling and never enough podcasting to go around as well.
And the last note here is just an MMA note and more so a business one. And that is the PFL is going to do their first ever pay-per-view on November 25th, the day after U.S. Thanksgiving from the Hulu Theater in New York. So this is going to air on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. I've not found out yet how this is going to affect international broadcasts. Of course, PFL airs on TSN up here in Canada. I don't know if it will be a traditional pay-per-view up here. I just don't see this card doing any kind of business on pay-per-view. They have Kayla Harrison, which is their notable star, fighting Larissa Pacheco, who she has beaten twice already. And this is all the finals of their tournaments. So you've got like an 8-fight main card, which starts at 8:00 Eastern. So all of the finals, there's like 6 tournament finals. They're all 5-round fights. That if they go the distance, I mean, geez, you'll be there until the next year's Thanksgiving. So I don't know. This is an experiment by the PFL. They've obviously they spend a ton of money and they're looking to recoup. But I can't imagine this doing any kind of business. But we will see how much power ESPN has, like the muscle they put behind this promotionally to promote it. But that's happening November 25th with Brendan Loughnane against Bubba Jenkins. Shane Burgos is fighting Marlon Moraes. That's a non-tournament fight. That will be Burgos's PFL debut. Tonight.
Postwrestling.com.
Postwrestling.com.
All your news.
It's up there, up to date. Andrew Thompson grinding it out on a daily basis. You can find all the news there. Shot in the Dark with John Cena. What better way to keep up with pro wrestling in 2022 than a 15-minute recap of everything with John Cena, Dan Masters passing away. We have a story on that, dying in a tragic car accident as well. So all of that news is up at postwrestling.com. Way, are you ready for Dynamite?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Well, we are at the Liacoura Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, with Excalibur, Tony Schiavone, and Taz. I think this many weeks in, it looks like it's a permanent move now with Jim Ross stationed on Rampage. I don't think we're getting the mixing and matching anymore.
Yeah, it was kind of strange. It felt like that was... I don't know if that was like the certain couple week, you know, thing was a trial. Obviously, we can continue to speculate about, like, you know, whether Jim Ross's public criticism of the company had anything to do with it. I don't expect we'll ever get a real answer about it. But I'm also not seeing many audiences complain about the change. You know, Taz has been clearly been the more effective, you know, color commentator.
The Jericho Appreciation Society starts off with their championship celebration, and the whole group is out in these purple suits, including emo Daniel Garcia in the back, who just is like being brought by dad to like the family reunion in costume. And there in the ring is the returning Luigi Primo, as there are pizzas set up for the celebration, and he's just spinning the dough throughout this segment. Parker insults Philadelphia. Menard called the pizza guy, and Luigi Primo says he made the best pizza from New York City. And then Menard says, "No pizza for you." And the crowd chants, "We want pizza." Anna Jay did her screaming promo and called Jericho the greatest ROH champion of all time. And Jericho says he's the most honorable man in AEW, the most viewed ROH champion ever, because no one knows about Ring of Honor. Which brought me back to when Christopher Daniels held the ROH television title, and Ring of Honor had just... they were in between television deals or of some sort. So he called himself the television champion because he was still working with Impact at the time. He's like, "I'm the only guy now that's on television." And thus he was, anyway, television champion. Yeah. I'm sure this is the tie-in you were seeking here from 2011.
Sure.
He then says that this is the era of the Ring of Jericho and explains why Bandido is getting this match tonight. He never got a rematch after losing the title, and put him over as one of the best wrestlers in the world, but sports entertainers always beat wrestlers, and refers to sports entertainer Daniel Garcia. And Jericho got him a gift. The crowd is chanting, "You're a wrestler," and he got Daniel Garcia a purple bucket hat. And Daniel Garcia just looks just deflated at this goddamn hat that he has been handed. So he takes the hat off, throws it down, and then Garcia decks Luigi Primo, who died on the spot. He never regained consciousness throughout this segment. He says, "This isn't him. He's had enough, and I've got something to tell you." And Jericho cuts him off, telling him to think first, because with us, you could be bigger than ever. But if you go against us, I'll take you out. Are you a sports entertainer, or are you a pro wrestler? And out comes Big Brother, Bryan Danielson, and he respects Garcia and says, "You can do whatever you want. You can stay with the Jericho Appreciation Society. You can come join us. You can train with us. You can train with them." And Jericho tells him to shut up. He's sick of Danielson trying to poach his talent. There's going to be no poaching in AEW, okay? No poaching. And Jericho says that Garcia does what he says. So Garcia cuts him off. "I don't belong to you, and I'm not going to do anything you tell me." And he asks, "What would be entertaining? Me spinning pizza dough with Luigi? Teaming up with Justin Roberts? Or maybe it would be entertaining if I teamed with Danielson against you and Sammy Guevara?" And the crowd gets really excited about this. But Menard cuts in, threatens to deck Danielson. And Danielson has been given the power to make a match. So he challenges Menard, and they have a match, an impromptu one, a rare impromptu match on Dynamite. And that was our first segment.
I thought it was a really fun opening segment. You know, this was our first instance of getting to see Chris Jericho as the face of Ring of Honor. And I really liked it. You know, as much as I don't know how much like people hold onto the sanctity of, ROH as, I don't know, a pure professional wrestling thing, but that's kind of what makes all of this brilliant. It's the irony of a sports entertainer holding, you know, the professional wrestler's world championship. As much as I wanted Claudio to be like the face of this company, I mean, it's charisma, it's personality, it's star power, and it's a voice that, you know, this brand needs right now. Ring of Honor has kind of been in the AEW stratosphere for quite some time, but we can honestly say it, that championship, I mean, it doesn't even feel, you know, secondary. Like it feels like it's sometimes beneath the TNT championship. So you need the star power of a Chris Jericho in order to bring this brand to the forefront. Jericho, as somebody who's already a principal character with a lot of mic time in AEW, he's essentially like helping provide a weekly commercial for ROH every single week. He's making him the title, a focal point of the story. I love calling it Ring of Jericho. It's so simple and so brilliant. We didn't think of it before. And you know, the storyline that you called last night, John, or on Monday, of him working through the ROH champions, I think is absolutely brilliant. Garcia is playing the role really well too. You know, he's almost so anti Jericho right now that it's almost like my wrestling logic tells me that, you know, we're just planning for a swerve here, but I think it's being built and teased to like a healthy, appropriate level right now.
Yeah. I think it's a great angle to go with the R-O-C-H-O-H.
Don't know about that.
There's something there. That's a building block. But my hope is that this can only climax with one matchup, and that is Chris Jericho on TBS opposite Loki.
I don't know if that's happening. I mean, it's sure. Why not? What's Xavier doing? You know,
Xavier has passed, so.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't even mean that. Apologies.
But it will. There are definitely, to the other point, though, I mean, when you look at the amount of people that they have access to, there's tons. Like, you could do this for quite a long period of time. And, like, being serious, I think, like, the end of, like, it being Joe, that's a great thing to build to. You've kind of planted the seeds for that with Jericho.
Can you name all of them right now that are currently on the roster? Daniels.
Let's take a look here.
Daniels. I mean, Claudio.
Let's go backwards here. So, like, you have Gresham, who, I mean, you know, you can certainly
coming back.
Well, it's like
he's not coming back to lose to Jericho, in my opinion.
You did Bandito. Roosh is there. PCO, you could get. Roosh, Matt Taven, Jay Lethal, Dalton Castle. Cody would
Matt
not be
Taven
available.
Coming back. Yeah, I could see that.
Cody, Daniels, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Cole, Lethal, Jay Briscoe, Michael Elgin, Jay Briscoe again, Kevin Steen, no, Davey Richards, Eddie Edwards. Like, there's tons here. Like, you could certainly do this. Like, it's only a handful that you would not have access to because they're in WWE or have retired.
And to make this point, you know, you only need a handful. Like, you know, for the duration of this story, you make, like, I think even four or five is enough, more than enough. So, yeah.
Could we get Jericho and Jerry Lynn?
I think they could do a segment, but, you know, maybe not a match.
I don't know if Jerry Lynn's going to do another match, but nonetheless, it's an interesting story that they've introduced here. They gave a mention to everyone affected by Hurricane Ian, and we get into the match with Danielson and Menard. Parker pulls Menard to the floor to get him away, big boos here, and then pulls Menard again to avoid the flying knee, and Danielson is run into he's crotched into the post, and Parker lays him out with a DDT on the floor, powerbomb by Menard for a two count. God bless. I don't think this crowd was buying Menard winning this. But Claudio runs down to destroy Parker, and European uppercuts this guy out of his shoes and carries him to the back. Busaiku knee, LaBelle lock in 840, and Tony Schiavone sneaks in a line that Bryan Danielson is a real man's man.
Oh, that he is. Of course he is. Yes. Yeah, good fresh TV matchup, you know, continues the feud. I think it was exactly everything it needed to be. I loved seeing Claudio come out here and picking up Angelo like a little kid, you know, from the playground. Like, I actually really like you know, Claudio in these sort of short bursts, very explosive physical spots. You know, I kind of prefer him as like the muscle and enforcer of a group right now. And in fact, I feel like now he's going to actually get the chance to really develop and maybe eventually start to get over as a principal player rather than just being put into the spotlight as a champion, expected to talk and carry a championship every week. I think he kind of needs that time to simmer a little bit.
We had the first of several video packages on the show. One thing I thought about tonight's show, number one, it was maybe the least amount of wrestling we've had on a 2 hour Dynamite. A lot more video packages, a lot more talking segments. I really did not mind the mix that they had. Like this felt like a much, this was not the frenetic pace I'm used to of Dynamite.
I still found it pretty fast, John, especially trying to like keep up with all the notes throughout this entire thing. But nonetheless, I did also note I felt like there were a bit more like video packages than usual. And to me, it at least helped my anticipation for some of the matches that they were building to. And we saw some online maybe criticism of why suddenly Bandido was getting this TV match when you have a roster that hasn't been, you know, really focused on. Why is Juice Robinson all of a sudden coming in and getting this sort of match when you don't have enough airtime? And Tony Khan, I believe in an Instagram post, responded to some of those criticisms, telling you exactly the storyline reasons why he wanted to make these matches. It's because Juice has beaten Mox. It's because Bandido was the last ROH champion and never got his rematch. And they took the TV time with these video packages to explain that reasoning.
Well, it's a difficult balancing act. Like you can, like we just explained how the Jericho story, like there's a cool story there, but how many of these matches are you going to do of pulling people onto your show when you have a locker room full of people that are just chomping at the bit for television time? Like you've got to weigh that. Like this might be a great story to tell, but you've also got this army of talent in your locker room. So, you can understand that frustration if you're a talent, but you know, it's also like you have to weigh that. If it's a great story, then you go that direction. But I like the video packages here. And even if, you know, that's, you know, a risk of viewership dropping during some of these video packages, I think it makes for a more complete show when you can flesh out these stories a bit more. And for people that maybe are not as familiar with Bandido.
To me, it's all about storytelling and it's all about building anticipation, you know, like a movie with only action scenes with no lead up to get to those action scenes is not a satisfying movie. If I don't know the reason why two people are fighting for it, it's great action, sure. But like I'm going to forget about it and I'm certainly not going to have as much anticipation for it.
Then we had a recap of MJF and Yuta from last week, and Yuta storms out to the ring here in his hometown, and he cuts a great promo here. He's got a problem with MJF, who had the audacity to put his hands on the great Tony Schiavone, who has done more for AEW than MJF ever has. And you hide behind this microphone because once the bell rings, you know you can't hang with me. So let's skip the part where you make fun of our sports team, you make fun of my personality, and get to the part where we fight. This guy was great here.
He was really good. Yeah, I thought so too. You know, last week, I think we all had like a pretty interesting reaction to the Yuta MJF segment where I think the entire audience recognized that this was really Wheeler Yuta like being thrown into the deep end, you know, in front of MJF, in front of his hometown. And it was, I mean, it was definitely a mismatch on the microphone, but I feel like at least between you and I, the consensus was that Yuta didn't drown. Okay, he survived. And rather than back away from putting him in that situation again, Tony like he's seeming like he's doubling down. It seems like this program, I mean, yes, it's a way to carry, you know, MJF towards the John Moxley match, but it's also being done for Wheeler Yuta for his development. And he put him into the Shark Tank again with MJF. This time, I think, you know, with the cushioning of Yuta being a part of his hometown. But already like 2 weeks in, I think I saw like drastic improvement on Wheeler Yuta on his part from his performance.
MJF walks out in a Mets jersey and calls Philadelphia the place you live if you can't afford to live in New York, and calls Schiavone a fat old prick and a low down coward. He acknowledges Yuta is not a coward. They grew up in the sport together on the indies, and says that Yuta is one of the best in the world. But you made a mistake going on the mic with Daddy last week, and Daddy had to put you in your place, and said that you have as much charisma as present-day Joe Frazier, who he notes is dead. and then insults the Phillies, which Yuta like calls him. He's like, I knew you would do this. It was as if he hadn't heard the preamble here. So MJF says, I don't give a... And wacky edits that we had, like these weird audio adjustments for when someone like, would swear.
They put like, you know, a slice of canned crowd noise over top.
Yeah, it was. I think you could just get away with censoring it, but nonetheless,
I miss he's bleeps. What happened to a good old fashioned bleep?
I think the bleep is more effective than actually saying the word. But he's a multimillionaire at the age of 26, and Yuta threatens him to leave him in a pool of his own blood on Broad Street, stating that bad things happen in Philadelphia. And the crowd cheered at this line. Like, yes, we do terrible things in this city. And the Gun Club come out to back up MJF, and MJF turns down the option for a match tonight, stating he'll face him next week in Washington, and he might just cash in his chip on the Blackpool Cuckold Club tonight when Moxley faces Juice, and then he leaves for the Guns to do his catchphrase for him. Like, these two just hanger-ons. But we did establish here, this is like your Money in the Bank briefcase now. We know how the chip works.
Mm. Right. Yes, you're right. Yeah.
He can cash it in on the spot.
Okay. There we go. Yeah.
It was a good segment.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's exactly the type of development and pressure that a Wheeler Yuta needs right now. And he's clearly like the type of performer that can step up to the challenge. And yeah, he's still going to be way outclassed. Like last week might have been a 10-8 MJF round. This week might have been a 10-9. But I mean, a 10-9 against MJF is already like, I think, good enough to, you know, beat a lot of people on, let's say, I don't know, AEW Dark or something, or people maybe at a comparable level. Like, I thought MJF also treated him really well, just simply by, you know,
putting him over. Like, that was the thing. Like last week was such a killer, was like part of his material was like running down his personality that, yeah, in comparison, like you're siding with the heel here, that it's you're calling something out that the audience can see for themselves. And this one, it was like, it was less about that. And he put him over as like a great wrestler.
And he cowered when Yuta tried to step forward and had to hide behind the Gun Club, and simply the visual of seeing that, I think is in itself, regardless of how Yuta's, you know, microphone performance was, it already elevates you to
Lethal Dutt and Satnam Singh. This was a video package to build up Lethal and Darby next week, and then we saw a shot of Darby complete with the staples in his head from last week. So man, there were some people walking wounded out of that no DQ match last week. And Lethal is going to go on his own for this match, so he's leaving Dutt and Singh in the back next week in Washington. Title Eliminator was next between Jon Moxley and Juice Robinson, and they bring up that Juice Robinson is one of two men that have beat Jon Moxley twice since he has come to AEW, the other being Kenny Omega, who was never mentioned. And Juice runs him into the guardrail during his entrance, and they cut to MJF watching in the private box with the chip, although they kept the cutaways to a reasonable amount in this match, unlike last week, where it was pretty much just constant. Big lariat out of the corner by Moxley, and Juice escapes the Death Rider on several attempts. During the picture-in-picture, of course, Moxley bleeds. So Juice is headbutting the wound, misses a cannonball, goes through a chair on the floor, and then they run at each other. Moxley lands the cutter, goes to the ankle lock, and then in the corner, Juice thumbs him in the eye. And Taz, I love this guy. This is great. He's taking his eye out. Moxley lands a kick to the midsection. Again, the Death Rider is stopped and then kicks out of the pulp friction. Moxley then spins off the shoulders, lands on his feet, regal knee, and goes to a straight arm bar. And we get the instant tap from Juice in 10 minutes and 29 seconds.
Entertaining, you know, very physical TV match. Something about it like made me feel like it wasn't as strong as their other matches. And I'm trying to struggle to think like whether if it's the physicality itself or maybe it's more so the lack of heat for this one, like, or at least my lack of interest in it, because I don't know, for some reason, like Moxley versus Juice in AEW, maybe at the time, maybe as part of a G1 or maybe at, like on a significant show, feels like it's a bit more built up to rather than just a kind of, you know, sort of a bit of a throwaway TV match that, you know, Moxley is going to win anyway. I feel like they used a lot of the same tricks that you would expect out of their, you know, other matches, like brawling on the outside, some big spots. You even saw blood here. But to me, like, at this point, watching like so much of this style of match in AEW, the blood didn't really feel that important. You know, even like the big move he did, like that senton off the apron through the chair, which is would otherwise be, I think, a pretty memorable spot, I kind of forgot about by the end of this show, certainly. So, I mean, again, it was designed to sort of be a special attraction for TV just to kind of get through another week of John Moxley's title defenses. And I thought it achieved that fine, but I don't know if it's a match I'll necessarily remember all that well.
Yeah, I would say this was not at the level of their two matches that they had in 2019. Far from it. You know, I thought Juice worked like well enough. Like it was a good television match, but I don't think this got to the level of great. It was a fine match. I think, you know, you had your audience that, you know, you could tell like this was an audience, like you could tell from the Bandido response, like this was a crowd that knew who these people were. Mm-hmm. They got into some of Juice's stuff, but I will say I think this was the right call to put Jericho Bandido on last, because these would have been your two options.
Yeah, especially after seeing that match. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, Juice, I think as well, I mean, beyond the fact that I think New Japan itself has cooled off, I mean, Juice Robinson has really cooled off, you know, maybe since that time initially when he was having in 2019 in that program with Mox.
And didn't come out of the G1 with a lot of steam this year. Like, it wasn't as though he had a tournament that everyone was, you know, raving about. Like, Archer in this spot might have, you know, you have that history with Moxley that might have connected a bit more, where you do have that history between the two as well.
On commentary, they kept pushing the fact that Juice Robinson is now a free agent. So is that leading to anything, you think? Like, first of all, is that true? Like, is he not tied down with New Japan?
That's what he has said. Yeah.
Oh, Juice.
That's what Juice has said. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what, like, if that's supposed to lead to any more like speculation about whether or not he'll be a part of AEW, or was it simply a way to like make us think that he had a chance of actually winning the championship, maybe? But I don't know. Is Juice Robinson a name that you could see coming in?
I don't know. To me that it's a harder one, but I've also seen other names come in that you would think that would not be priority. Like, he's a good talent, but this is a company just loaded with good talents, so I don't know if he would cross the threshold for me of somebody that would be a necessary person to bring in, unless you have a real big idea for them. And this did not build to anything for him to come back at the end either. There was no angle shot.
Yeah, I wouldn't say Juice is like I think, you know, immediate main eventer, for instance, but I certainly think there's enough, like, there's more than enough talent that you could use to mold to fit into, you know, your framework.
He's a great promo and would, in theory, get more promo time here.
Totally.
Hope.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, his spouse is already, you know, a champion, and maybe there's some sort of on-screen pairing you can use to help elevate, you know, Tony Storm as well. So, it's possible. But yeah, I just found it weird, like, all this free agency talk when I don't even know if that's true.
What if he found a tag partner?
Okay, hit me. What is it?
An honorary Juice. Jeez. Hangman Page comes out for a face-to-face with John Moxley. The crowd is chanting cowboy shit, and he dumps his wallet out, which means it's time to fight in Philadelphia. I hope he got his wallet back. But MJF interjects and says that the two of them are not fighting to win the title. They're fighting to lose the title to him, and he might cash in when they meet. And he calls himself a generational talent when Wheeler Yuta appears from behind in the private box and destroys MJF. And then the security are getting involved, and he strikes the security guard members. So we got the same angle as the closing one at NXT on Tuesday, where Gallus struck the security guards and got arrested. But Yuta did not get arrested here, but MJF was pissed. But I would imagine they play something up here of Yuta striking the security guards. Like, that seems to be something that they will not go unchecked.
Well, the thing is, I mean, MJF attacked Tony Schiavone. We didn't get any sort of punishment for MJF. So, I mean, you know, is Jericho going to get punished for attacking Bobby Cruz, you know, or security guards that much? You know,
I will say, after the whole Paul Turner thing last week about tightening things up, I mean, I guess we didn't get as much issue with referees on this show, but non-wrestling officials, I mean, there was plenty of violence administered.
Just wanted to point out, Nathan Dewey in the chat room also suggesting we would have also accepted orange juice.
Yeah, I think that one's been done, though. But yes, sure. Then a great video for Jericho and Bandido, including the use of the All-In footage. with the
I didn't even notice.
Yeah, wow, they used the footage from All In.
They own that now. Right, yeah, cool.
The main event that they had to absolutely race through to get. And then we had highlights of Serena Deeb beating Toni Storm 2 weeks ago, and then Soraya's debut last week. And Soraya comes out and says she has chills in the ring. She is damaged, but she is not broken, and she is here to create change in the women's division. She is the revolution. And notes to the crowd that this has been a while. She's nervous, and she seemed it. She says that AEW is officially her house and dismisses the time cues and calls out the women's division. And I was expecting like this procession, and out came Toni Storm, Athena, Willow Nightingale, Madison Rayne, and Sky Blue. So we had five baby faces come out, and Soraya promises change. And then we think she's going to go like one by one here. And she calls out Toni Storm, who says she's finally being utilized to her full potential and is AEW's best champion that they have ever seen. And even Toni Storm seemed like, okay, let's cool it here. Okay, there's been some great champions.
First of all, like she's an interim champion, and unless intentional, you know, I mean, it's a major slight to every single prior champion that's existed, including, you know, your Hikaru Shidas and your Rihos and your Nyla Roses and your Thunder Roses, who is still technically the real champion right now.
It was like some weird, like, playing off of Soraya that we saw from Toni Storm here. It was almost like it was like she was like questioning like Soraya's motives here, but maybe that was like me reading too much into it. So then the heels come out. We've got Britt Baker, who confirms she has a broken nose and it was taped up. Rebel, Jamie Hayter, and Penelope Ford. And Baker calls Soraya the new shiny toy, and we've seen them all come and go, and she's just a catchphrase before she did her own catchphrase. But she's the face of the division, and I put my neck on the line for AEW, but unlike Soraya, mine is strong enough to handle it. And says, half the people don't even know how to pronounce your name. And Soraya comes back saying, wait a minute, you're Britt Baker. Your name rhymes with shit. But unfortunately, this is not the shit era anymore of AEW. So this line probably just was left for the imagination of the televised audience at home. And Baker, the crowd starts chanting for Jamie Hayter, and Baker says she will be a champion and tells Toni Storm if she has one misstep, then she's going to lose that title. And Soraya says how her boss finally listens to her, and she has the power to make this a lumberjack match. And then Soraya leaves ringside to join commentary for Toni Storm and Serena Deeb. But a lengthy segment here, putting the women's division out here. Not all of the women, but I guess your prominent members that they're focusing upon.
I suppose so. The ones that kind of make the cut for Dynamite and Rampage, I guess.
And probably some that were not able to be there on Wednesday as well, you could guess.
Okay. I have a lot of thoughts about this particular segment.
Go for it.
There's a lot of anticipation, I think, for Soraya. Soraya's, you know, first time speaking about her new role in AEW. I think at the very least, we were looking for some clarity about like what exactly she is here to do. With, I think, most of us expecting her announcing or confirming an in-ring return, we did not get that here. In fact, like her actions felt that of a on-screen GM for the women's division, somebody to kind of like be some sort of babyface voice for I don't know, the state of the AEW women's division. So number one, I think that needed some clarity, unless they were specifically dragging that out to make us, I don't know, anticipate it. Or maybe they don't know yet. I don't know. But you're just kind of left with the feeling of disappointment and, at worst, confusion coming out of it. Suddenly, she has the ability to make a lumberjack match with everybody. I don't really get that, because we've never had that in AEW itself. You know, somebody making a match for somebody else, like that they're not even really affiliated with. They're not, it's not like they're part of a faction. Yeah, we had Danielson, you know, being able to book a match between himself and Daddy Magic off the top, but that's him. Like, why is Soraya suddenly able to make a lumberjack match for somebody else? It calls, like, again, it kind of reminds me, or it suggests that she's some sort of like GM. And at that point, you're suddenly asking, is AEW like going with a WWE tropey GM role for Soraya, which would be awfully disappointing. But more importantly, it was awfully explained here. I felt it was good to have like a visual roll call, you know, for like the division. Hey, like these are all the characters we have now. These are the good guys and these are the bad guys. But I also didn't really like the way that they did it here, that almost kind of blanketed everybody as like, a, you know, you're either on this side or on that side without any real character motivation to suggest why Willow Nightingale and Toni Storm are suddenly friends. Why is Penelope Ford with Britt Baker? Has that ever been established? It kind of reduces everybody to just like very basic black and white roles rather than, you know, people with depth and characters with depth. It certainly put a dampening on, I think, my anticipation for like what Saraya was here to do. She came in and she was kind of awkward on the microphone, and that certainly continued on commentary throughout the match.
Yeah, I would say, I wouldn't say that like the promo was like, she sounded fine to me during the promo, but you could tell like it was like she said as much. Like, I think she was really thrown by like the reaction from people, and it's not done like a promo in a ring for a long, long time. Commentary, she was just, to me, just didn't know how to weave in with three other people. And she was almost, I mean, Taz would make a point and she would just echo his point like verbatim.
Yeah. To that, and maybe we'll talk about that a bit later after we talk about the match, but like about like just even her maybe being sort of like thrown off by the crowd's, reception to her. I guess I can understand it, but I feel like it's more pronounced in an AEW style of television where we know that they're more so given kind of like, you know, loose points and bullet points rather than in the WWE, where I thought Paige did a fantastic job as a GM, or, I mean, they, you know, if they're structuring word for word everything that they're saying, you're going to, you know, not get some of these like weird presentation issues that I feel like AEW has sometimes suffered from people who, you know, like don't come up with a more organized sort of like thought, like, you know, script for what they're going to say. There's a lot of like communication issues, I felt like, just with this promo itself.
Yeah. In terms of direction for her, I don't think it's the worst idea that if she is able to do a match and is cleared, that, you know, you don't have to disclose that week one. Like, that can be the culmination of something big down the road where she's in this kind of figurehead role. And then at some point you lead to the match and it's revealed that she can wrestle. So I don't think you necessarily had to disclose that now. But I can also understand like the pushback.
Then why not play to that? You know, why not introduce that as a story element?
I think we should have had a clear, like, if they are putting her in this authority role, then, and obviously I think they very much want to shy away from the term general manager, but you can only mask it so many ways. If that's what they're doing, that's what they're doing. And you're right, they could have made that a bit more clear. Like, is this,
you know, like,
is this her role?
You could have had Baker taunt her. Hey, like, you're, I know you're coming here, you're trash talking all of us, but we also know that you're not cleared. You're only here to, you know, such and such, so you can't put your hands on me, blah, 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 blah. And then you use that to build to whatever reveal down the road. But we don't even know if she's even a figurehead. You know, we're just kind of left wondering, because I just felt like anyway, let's talk about the match itself.
Well, Taz on commentary says he wants to be PC, so he's going to call this a lumberjill match. And Soraya says, we're inclusive here, it's lumberjack. And Taz just backs off. He's like, okay.
Does that mean?
What?
Like, calling it lumberjack is more inclusive?
I guess to Soraya it is, yes.
That's fine, whatever.
I mean, they did call it an Iron Man match in NXT as well, so they're going with that term. Athena rolls Deeb into the ring. There's a big release German. And then Deeb sits down on Storm's neck, pulling at her arms, and then applies a crucifix. Hater pulls Storm to the floor, and Willow Nightingale chases her to the back. Serenity Lock gets applied, and Storm fights to the rope, and then she's caught in a half crab, escapes that, and lands the hip attack, hits the Storm Zero, and there's a big near fall. Dragon Screw in the corner, but then Storm is on the turnbuckle with a Storm Zero off the second turnbuckle, and this keeps Deep down in 11 minutes and 8 seconds. As I said before, I just thought Paige got lost on commentary with the other three.
Yeah, admittedly, most of my attention was on Saraya, rather than like maybe the match itself. Like, really, it was on the disappointment, I think, of the segment prior, as I was getting my thoughts down, rather than the match itself. Like, I thought like the most egregious thing about this segment was the announcers putting over how brilliant her decision to create a lumberjack was for the women, as if a lumberjack match for the women was some sort of revolutionary idea, part of this like weird narrative that she's supposed to come in and to usher in this
she
this
said it was
revolution.
The first time they've had a lumberjack match with the women in AEW, but yeah, she was also trying to make the point that with the numbers evened out, like Britt Baker can't get involved and you know, doesn't have the numbers advantage that she usually has.
So what is it? Like, fair matchmaking is what she's here to usher in? That's the revolution?
Yes.
Because, like, you know, there's subtext here that, like, yeah, the AEW Women's Revolution has always been a point of criticism from the fan base, and she is somehow supposed to come in here to usher change to, I don't know, bring it to the forefront. I don't know if creating a lumberjack match was any sort of thing that the audience was demanding, that, you know, this division suddenly needed, and to somehow like push, like you had Taz saying, what a wonderful matchmaking idea. Lumberjack match. Great job, Paige. This is revolutionary. Like, that is silly to me. And overall, I just thought it was a bad performance from Saraya on commentary. Like, she called this match like a Twitch stream, you know, like it didn't really sound like she was a character with any sort of like determination to actually like have some real story reason to like address problems and make this better. It sounded more like, hey guys, like, let's have some fun here. Wow, that was a cool move, wasn't it? You know, lumberjack match, when was the last time that happened? Like, there was really nothing of substance, and I even question how much she's been following AEW TV up until this point, because I didn't really get that sense watching this,
the Twitch stream.
Yeah,
it's a good comparison. So this was not a home run for Saraya week one.
It really killed my like point. Yeah, it really killed my sort of like hype, you know, from last week.
Shivani is with the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. Next Wednesday is National Scissoring Day, and they have an open contract to defend the tag titles on Rampage. Keith Lee walks in and says Swerve is not here because he's disgruntled, and he alerts the Acclaimed that Billy Gunn got physically involved last week and cost them the tag titles. You guys got carried. And Billy just says, we've got two words for you. Scissor me, and laughs uproariously. So a rematch seems to be on the menu for the near future.
Yeah, I like that Lee like wasn't really kind of playing into any sort of like real heelish demeanor here. He was coming out here and rightfully calling out the injustice of Billy Gunn like cheating, and it kind of works, you know, for his sort of tweener role that he's in right now. I personally, even though like this was fine, like it served to set up the match or down the road, I would have loved to see them play Bowen's post-match clip that circulated online. I don't know if you got a chance to see it,
John. Yeah.
It was just him really like speaking from the heart after winning this championship in the back about how, you know, he never thought he would be in this position. He grew up with a lot of confusion, and it like to me almost like felt like, you know, the closest thing we've had in a long time to a Ric Flair after the Royal Rumble type of emotion in a post, you know, championship win. And I it doesn't build to the story, but I thought it was real emotion caught on film that deserved a spot on air.
Andrade had some real emotion getting in between Private Party and the Butcher and the Blade, and he tells Mark Quinn that you work for me, and Jose the translator tells Private Party to either ship up or ship out. And as they leave, Matt Hardy walks in and he tells Private Party that last week in that battle royal, it just felt right. And they are connected with Andrade, and it's way worse for your career than Big Money Matt was. And then Matt Hardy says, get out of your deal. Get out of your contract. And I'll be here waiting when the storm ends, and I promise we'll do it right. So, I mean, just flagrant tampering here on camera by Matt Hardy.
Right, yeah. More lawsuits, right? Yeah. I didn't even know Private Party were still part of this whole thing. I cannot give any less shit about anything to do with the Hardy family office, the Andrade family office, and by extension, Private Party at this point.
Like, what about The Office?
Well, The Office, yeah, sure, that's legendary, you know. British or American?
American.
Yeah, yeah. I could talk about The Office all day. I'll give plenty of shits for The Office. But, like, I've been so done with all this stuff. I thought they were over. I thought it was, like, what is it, Los Angeles Bernables now. Like, is Andrade Family Office even a thing anymore? Obviously, it is. So now they're trying to retell some sort of, like, you know, contract storyline with, like,
get out of your contract party and come back to me.
I don't, like, I'm done. Who cares?
I don't know. Maybe I read too much into this, but it was like the topic was like, you left me, but you've left for a worse place. So get out of your contract and come back here. Like, that's kind of what the story is.
I'm sure there's some double entendre there. Yes.
Ricky Starks destroyed Eli Isom. He went for the spear, and it was like semi-blocked, so he just hit a second one and then hit Rochambeau, 51 seconds, noting Eli Isom's ROH pass. But this was just super quick, fast victory for Ricky Starks, but got a good pop.
Yeah, yeah. I this is one of those instances where I kind of feel like the win over Wardlow, against Hobbs, that it was supposed to be such a big culminating, like, end of program type of match last week and the lights out thing. It felt like it was kind of glossed over or not even really mentioned on this show. Like, it might have been a place where, like, a recap of the match plus a promo from Starks might have served better than just this squash.
Rampage on Friday has Roosh against John Silver, The Acclaimed, Private Party, and Butcher and the Blade for the tag titles, Willow Nightingale versus Jamie Hayter, Hook will appear, and Lee Moriarty versus Fuego del Sol. So you do have a title match. It's not the most stellar lineup. We also don't know what kind of talent they were short this week or what their options were. I think you do have to take that into consideration of who was around this week versus original plans they might have had. Dynamite next week. It's the 3-year anniversary show. So they've announced MJF and Yuta. Luchasaurus will be in action with Christian in his corner. Darby Allin against Jay Lethal. National Scissoring Day. And Jericho and Guevara against Danielson and Garcia. So this was the match they teased in the first segment. And the Philadelphia will get to watch this on TV next week.
Cool.
Jungle Boy reflected on his attack by Christian and Luchasaurus last week, and that takes us to Chris Jericho against Bandido for the ROH Championship with Ian Riccaboni and Bobby Cruz, who would be front and center at the end of this. Jericho makes fun of the handshake at the beginning, ending with the middle finger, and then Bandido. What a performance this guy had. Tope and Fosbury flop right out of the gate, and then he lifts up Jericho for the delayed vertical suplex and gets the crowd to count. And I'm just thinking, like, dude, he's going to make it to 20. Would be awesome if he makes it to 20. Dude, he just keeps him hoisted up there, and he's keeping him up there. And just when the audience thinks he's going to have to let him down, he keeps going. And then this crowd just gets on their feet. And this audience, if they were not familiar enough with Bandido, this won them over. And they love this guy. And this seemed like a crowd that they totally were up to speed on who this guy was. And it really did add so much to the match, because I thought Bandido just had an unbelievable performance, but it was aided by a crowd that got into all of his big stuff.
Agreed. Yeah. Even if you're only, like, maybe more so familiar with Bandido in name, I think simply, like, having him be in the main event, it's against Chris Jericho, somebody of you know, the highest star power. And then seeing the performance itself is, like, more than enough. It was the same effect that All In. Like, here's a guy that in Bandido that, like, I wonder how many people prior to All In had even really heard of. But the confidence that they had in getting him to take that spot in the main event, I think, you know, once you see him in action, it's well deserved.
Bandido follows with a frog splash, gets a big Eddie chant, then comes off the turnbuckle into a code breaker. They fight onto the edge, and Bandido lands a Rana, sending Jericho to the floor. We come back. There's blood on the mask of Bandido. Jericho hits the lion salt. Then Bandido goes for the X knee, and it's countered into the walls of Jericho. Bandido escapes, and they go onto the turnbuckle. and you can see Bandito lifting him up. And I just thought there was absolutely no way that they were going to try this. He hits the fallaway moonsault on Chris Jericho and landed it pretty goddamn flawlessly. I could not believe that he did this with Chris Jericho.
Well, I mean, it's really a move more so on Bandito, isn't it? And we know the man has freakish strength when it comes to the spot.
To rotate over with this individual, he then lands the X knee, and then the real sign here, he signaled for the 21-plex, and this place went nuts. They knew what he was signaling for. Hits it, huge near fall. Like, this crowd believed on several of these near falls that Bandito was going to win this match. And then Jericho flips the mask so it blinds Bandito. He gets the lion tamer, and Bandito is forced to tap as he's blinded. Awesome, awesome match. And to me, like, you want to talk about just I don't want to say like this was like star making or career making. Like, Bandito's had like a pretty strong career, but to come on to national television and have a match like this
with Chris
I don't think you could ask for much better. Like, he came here, and to me, he won a job. I don't imagine how you could not bring this guy back. I love this main event.
On a roster that has, you know, arguably been as bloated and, I don't know, lacking in TV time as like AEW might, it takes a hell of a performance to even like get people to, you know, like the bar is set pretty high right now for AEW and you know, perhaps winning the idea of like a spot on the roster. But coming out of this match, I completely think most people would completely like be happy if Bandito got a spot, because he's that spectacular of a type of performer. He's the type of performer that, like, you know, you just have to watch one of his matches in a high profile setting and he'll win you over. It's a hell of a way to, you know, set this Chris Jericho ROH title defense run off. I mean, it's a great continuation of the incredible year in ring that Chris Jericho has had. We will look back at this year and, like, maybe he's already achieved it. It could be his best in-ring year, like, thus far. Like, it's really been absolutely incredible, him having this sort of caliber of match with, like, you know, people half his age, seemingly, sometimes. It was great.
Yeah, just a outstanding match on the show. And then Jericho says the Ring of Jericho era has begun. He is changing what ROH is and will destroy its legend and beat every great champion that's ever held the Ring of Jericho title. And it's going to continue on October the 12th when he takes on Bryan Danielson in Toronto. And with that, attacks Bobby Cruz and hits him with the Judas effect to end the show.
God, what a main event for Toronto.
Is Bobby Cruz, was this his write-off? Is he not going to make it to Toronto? Will Jericho get his own ring announcer?
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I mean, Cruz should sell it at least, but I mean, Toronto's 2 weeks away. I mean, that might be enough recovery time. We saw...
No, Carey took the bump and he didn't come back.
True, you're right.
They were in his hometown. They were in Philadelphia.
You're right. So I guess Carey walked it off and then had, you know, the delayed repercussions of the attack of the next
day. He's going to write off all these ROH stalwarts. Ian Riccaboni, better look out.
I know. Who else?
Caprice.
I mean, Caprice can handle himself, I'm sure. Does Paul Turner still count?
I guess anyone with ROH with an ROH lineage, he's going after. So
okay, I love the idea. Again, like, the best part about it all is that it puts a real spotlight on the brand of ROH, which they did more for ROH tonight than at any point, you know, throughout this entire run.
So there you have it. A match for. So we have, like, next week is the anniversary show, and then the week after that, it's Jericho and Danielson, and the week after that is the Tuesday show with Moxley and Hangman Page. So they've kind of, like, laid out your big matches for the next 3 weeks. Although nothing – we'll see if they shoot any angles for Rampage, but nothing for Battle of the Belts so far, which is next Friday. So
isn't that the norm?
I guess.
For Battle of the Belts, it's, like, it's the third show on, like, behind Rampage right now.
Maybe just do, like, the tune in and find out what titles are defended. It's going to be a mystery vortex.
Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, that might be like, if they actually made a name for, like, hey, like, yeah, a mystery vortex type of show, you don't know who's going to show up. That might actually be a bit more appealing.
So I don't think anyone is going to argue that this was like the best Dynamite in terms of in-ring action, although the main event was, to me, outstanding. But I did enjoy like the pacing of this show. To me, it felt like more balanced. I did not mind having in that first hour like two talking segments with MJF and Yuta and the opener with the Jericho Appreciation Society and Danielson. I don't think it's a bad thing to deviate from your formula. It doesn't have to be chock full of bell-to-bell wrestling. You can do other stuff as well, and there seemed to be a concerted effort with more video packages on the show too. So I think it might not get the response of some other Dynamites, but I didn't mind the change.
Well, maybe it's just because I'm taking notes at the same time, but I felt this was just as fast, you know, because I got a lot from the talking segments, you know, not just like the in-ring action. Like, there's a lot to take from the talking segments that we have to keep up with as well. But
I got to go to the bathroom during Dynamite tonight. I went upstairs at one point. That was two times I got to look. Yeah, dude. So that's, I don't get to do that during Dynamite. Okay. I'm usually glued on my chair. I can't move for 2 hours. Yeah. So it was wonderful.
I certainly feel like, you know, like, I think Dynamite, so much of its identity, AEW itself, its identity is based off of the anti-WWE. What are the things that people typically complain about WWE, and how do we do it the opposite way? And oftentimes, yeah, we complain about WWE having way too many video packages, too many talking segments, not enough in-ring action. But I think AEW, over the course of its, you know, existence, has kind of veered too much in the other direction. So I want to see both shows right now start to pull it back a bit. You know, WWE delivering a bit more in-ring content, maybe moving a bit faster. AEW maybe slowing things down, you know, a little bit more talking, a little bit more video packages. You know, there's no need to go to either extreme.
Okay. Well, there is our thoughts on Dynamite. Now we send it over to you. If we have super chats, we will also be going to the forum.
Yeah, of course, you can always leave a super chat here and the YouTube. I also want to actually make mention, because I never did before, but all of our YouTube members, if you guys have anything to say, well, I can at least see that you are a YouTube member. So if you want to comment anything right now, during our feedback sections, I will always highlight them, if you have any thoughts about tonight's show. But first, we go to Kishan Amurali, our executive producer for this week's Rewind Away. He says, Britt talking about the title and no reaction from Jamie tells me the program is on the back burner, which sucks. Glad they included the Jungle Boy promo from The Road 2. Great main event and nice debut for Bandido. I'm really glad, Kishan, you brought up Jamie Hayter, because that moment where the crowd was chanting her name, hijacking the segment essentially, when she was not a highlighted portion of this segment at all,
and Bray, like, had to address it.
Tony Khan should be thanking this crowd, because they are giving Jamie, like, this Jamie Hayter run a second chance. I can't believe how much they're squandering that goodwill right now. Like, this is a baby face that is just dying to burst out of this division, and yet, like, today she was back to being a silent sidekick with really no real role except to run away from Willow Nightingale. And it's fine. You're feuding her with Willow Nightingale. I suppose that's okay. But
Baker's also hurt now. So how much did that pause things of where you're going there?
Okay. But that, to me, is still no excuse to put Jamie Hayter back in sort of like, you know, a silent role. I understand they might be building onto some sort of like 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 type of situation. You kind of need Hayter. I still think it's a waste in terms of timing, because you have right now the crowd that's ready for her to peak, and you're pulling her back so much that I worry that, you know, you won't have it again.
It's a risk. Later. You want to get the timing right. I mean, I'm sure their idea is to draw this out, and it's going to build and build, but you always risk like missing it. If like the audience just feels like they've been swerved too many times and they kind of lose that interest, you don't want to miss like the peak to execute that turn.
Thank you, Kishan, for the $20 super chat and your continued membership of the Post Wrestling Patreon. We got a Rob Bahari, frequent contributor here on the YouTube side of things. He sends $5. Rob says, imagine not signing Bandido after tonight. All right, in the form of a question, can you imagine them not signing Bandido after tonight?
No, it'd be insane. It would be WWF watching When Worlds Collide and at the end of it saying, you know what? Let's go after Luis Piccoli.
Okay. It's an interesting question, though, because yes, not anybody, but like a lot of wrestlers on the indie scene right now can have a big match, you know, on a one night featured high profile thing. But 6 months from now, like, where would you realistically see a Bandido if he signs full time to AEW?
It's impossible to say. I mean, yeah, you always run that risk. I think in this company that someone could get like lost in the shuffle. But I mean, look at a guy like Takeshita who came in and he just caught fire, and they realized that and they kind of got on top of him. And, you know, he had to go back to Japan, but I think that, you know, he got as over as you could ask for. And I think like Bandido, I see as even, very much on that same level of someone new, fresh, that a crowd just totally bought into tonight and is now coming off a super hot segment, a hot match. I think he's a tremendous talent, but I thought that before tonight. I didn't need this match to convince me of that.
Because AEW is such an in-ring based product, like, yeah, no doubt he'll always be over. I just feel like there should be a higher ceiling for a guy than just, you know, guaranteed hot match, but, you know, we won't hear from him otherwise. Like, you know, people like a Rey Fénix and Nepenta, yes, they're somewhat in like roles, but like, I feel like we never have stories with them. You know, I feel like they're not much more than just like these guys that are out there to like have great matches. And I don't know. I just hope like if a Bandido comes in, like they actually have a story and a character for him, you know. Thank you, Rob, as always, for your thoughts. And lastly, we got a Davidian Alter who sends $2 just to support. So thank you very much for your support. All you guys in the post-wrestling YouTube right now.
We're going to start off on the forum with David from Israel. For me, this was one of the worst Dynamites in a long time. The crowd was dead from pretty much the opening segment until the main event, and we had a worst segment of the year contender in the Saraya promo. Bringing her in what seems to be a commissioner role is a baffling choice to me if she's not cleared to wrestle, and this segment absolutely died out there. AEW's women's division desperately needs new direction. Please, no more AHFO, HFO, or any combination of this stable on television. Don't make me watch another tiring descent segment between them. And congrats, Way, on the new baby.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I think just the whole notion of like AEW needing a revolution, that itself, I feel like, is kind of flawed, because as much as I think we might like criticize it, it's had a lot of bright spots. And to say that it's like, you know, been like, it was kind of put in as if it was like this was her version of like, you know, changing the Divas portion to like the women's revolution. It was certainly not that, you know, and it's
not, but there is a lot of dissent towards the women's division as a whole. But I understand what you're saying. Like,
is she going to put the women in the main event? Is that what really she should have done instead of make a lumberjack match? A revolutionary idea.
Hey, it's never been done before, Way. Not in AEW.
All right, we got a Senior Cress who says, "Hello, guys. First time, long time. I love the show for the most part, but the pacing was off. Felt like a taped show. Crowd was insane as always. I love seeing stars from other companies/free agency. You guys are great. Keep it up." So there you go. Maybe video packages, you know, to some people makes it feel like.
Listen, there is going to be like watching a show like that. Like, this wasn't one of the great Dynamites. I'm not going to argue that at all. I mean, you take out the main event, like match quality wise, this was on the lower side. I think you would argue as well. But I think in terms of the video packages, like you have to argue, like, what are we sacrificing by putting these video packages in? It's to get these other matches, you know, that level of importance and to convey the story at home. And that has been a criticism from some. Like, you could eliminate those. Like, they're not necessarily as advantageous when it comes to, you know, keeping your viewership up, like, minute by minute. It's, you know, they have had this was certainly a departure from that, but it's sort of what you're sacrificing for hopefully a match that resonates with the audience at a larger clip than just putting it out without it.
We got a super chat here just coming in from Hanzi, who says, "Who would you put versus Jericho for the for final battle?"
So if they do it in December, I mean, to me, it's like, it's the point you brought up, Wade, like Jericho and Joe, to me, it's like, I guess like that's your ultimate test of what an ROH pay-per-view is going to do with like that kind of buildup and the biggest ROH title match you can do. But it's like, again, if it was AEW final battle, it's doing like so much more. Mm-hmm. Now this is on a much more pushed AEW star, and it's going to have television time that is going to be pushed like a major pay-per-view. But I still think those ROH letters on a pay-per-view, there's going to be a ceiling to it.
Yes, but I can also understand that anything to do with Ring of Honor is an investment for Tony Khan in order to try to boost that brand up so that he can eventually sell it, you know, to highest bidder to air a TV show, for instance. So I think you take the loss, you know, if it means like being able to have more data to show, you know, a potential client, hey, this is what we did with Ring of Honor. But who would you put? Any ideas? It would have to like, yeah, Joe. Okay. Is that, yeah,
I mean, you could go to that list. Like you could do like the ROH champions as long as you'd like. Like there's, you have mm-hmm. access to, you know, three quarters of them, if not more. So
CM Punk.
Yeah, that one might not be in the of the available options, but yeah, like a Jericho Joe program to me, it would be that to me would be a big one to build up to.
Hmm. Thank you, Hanzi. Let's go back to forum.postwrestling.com where all of our Patreon members can post feedback to all of our shows every single episode. We go to Mark. Oh, let me read this one, John. Mark P. Bandido gave a performance of a lifetime, and I hope he gets further opportunities within AEW.
Hernice writes, Warner really told AEW to cut back that shit being bleeped out. How do you guys feel about ROH having such a strong presence in an AEW show where there isn't even room for AEW wrestlers? Lastly, can we stop with biting open wounds? And, well, I mean, it's, you know, it's what we talked about before. They've got a story, and this ROH, Jericho being ROH champion, that was not going to be some periphery story. I mean, he is going to be a major, you know, character on AEW television. And I mean, it was set up in the promo, like they're going to continue with this and it is pushing ROH. And that's going to mean bringing back probably former champions. That's probably going to be, you know, happening many times over.
Yeah. I don't like, you know, I think everybody needs to realize the reason why we're getting so much ROH presence on the show is because it's a potential, it's another major avenue, revenue stream for Tony Khan. You know, for content that he could sell, and that's why it's worth it, you know, pushing that stuff in. So okay, so he's saying about like why is Bandido on the show? I think like Tony likes to make special attraction matches, you know, things that like maybe the audience wouldn't expect to see, just from typical matchmaking looking at the roster. I definitely think you could make an argument about like, well, who exactly is Bandido a special attraction for? It's for, you know, the hardcore wrestling fan. Like if you're somebody who's been watching only AEW on TNT, you wouldn't have any idea who Bandido is. But I mean, this is also a product that is very much catered towards the hardcore wrestling fan.
So. And that's an audience I want to serve. Like I know that audience mm-hmm. is tuning in, so I'm going to give them something. Like personally, as a consumer of this, I like the idea that people can pop up and there's matches I've never seen before that I have the chance to see. It's, like, there comes a point that you kind of have to look at, like, Tony Khan is designing this show that is going to hopefully be the most entertaining show that has the largest audience possible. And you're trying to combine that, and then you're trying to keep so many different parties happy. At a certain point, you have to commit to a vision, and mm-hmm. that's going to leave people upset. You can't yeah. spread goodwill to everybody. You mm-hmm. have to have what is the priority and cut out the noise and worry and not worry so much about hurting feelings. Like at the end of the day, this is your product that you are going into a major year when it comes to having the best product possible to increase your rights. And you have to have a solid vision of what is the easiest way to that goal.
Yeah, I do agree. Let's continue here. Is it me or you?
You're up with Cody. Okay.
We got a Cody from Maine who says Dynamite finding its old school feel has been mentioned a lot in the last few weeks. I couldn't agree more with that sentiment after this show. To say there were a lot of moving parts with a lot of things thrown at the wall to see what would stick would be an understatement. Poor Excalibur with that rundown. But as always, there was some very solid wrestling, which brings me to my seemingly weekly praise of the year Chris Jericho is having. Here's hoping this is the last we've seen of Bandido as well. There was even a brawl in the stands. Very reminiscent, although not quite in the same extremes of Omega Moxley or Jericho and Cody, not the Dippin' Dots. Sir, Dippin' Dots? What's the Dippin' Dots?
That was one of the early Dynamites, that spot in the concourse.
Okay. I gotcha, right. Certainly not an
all-time Ross line?
Yeah. Right. Certainly not an all-time great Dynamite, but there was plenty of positives to take away. Perhaps that's the law of averages kicking in given how much was on this show.
Yeah, it's an interesting number for tomorrow. Like you're coming off of like, you know, some strong numbers the last week. Grand Slam, I think maybe a little below what people were expecting. But your major matches were built around, you know, Juice Robinson and Bandido that are not going to necessarily have that reach. And we'll also see, like, Soraya speaking was the other segment that they promoted heavily as well. So, I mean, regardless, it'll be – I would say if this number is within the range of last week, I would take that as a big positive, because this is – marquee-wise, this was a comedown after such a big show.
It was not Grand Slam.
Yeah. Not at all. Kate from Montreal, tonight definitely felt like the Bandido show because that match was phenomenal. The crowd really seemed to buy into the idea that he could win a couple of times. I saw a lot of hate for the women's segment, and while I agree it came apart, I was also very happy to see someone acknowledge that the division does need changes. Very refreshing after 3 years of being told, shut up, everything is fine.
Yeah, I absolutely don't disagree that, like, some sort of, like, you know, like, reset type of segment would have been great. I just didn't think that the direction they went in, like, helped at all. In fact, like, I feel like it took the division back slightly. Number one, like, just the idea that, like, now the division is going to have some sort of GM, which I think just calls back to, like, things about WWE wrestling that we don't really like. A lumberjack match, I just didn't think was the great scene setter you wanted to usher in a, you know, supposed new era, because I now suddenly feel like everybody besides Toni Storm and who did she even, like, Serena Deeb, like, everybody else just kind of felt like, you know, a generic person around the ring. But I look forward to talking to Kate about some of that in some of the weeks to come when she appears on a Rewind of SmackDown. We got a Bruce Lord, our other frequent contributor, who says, I was double screening Dynamite alongside a pretty historic Jays and Yankees game, but between the great main event and a pretty fun deep store match, there was enough here to make up for a weak crowd, plus some timing and tech issues, and hold my attention. Between the Garcia segment, the Yuta MJF feud, and Jericho's plans to desecrate the legacy of ROH, a huge portion of the show is focused on the pro wrestlers versus sports entertainers dynamic. I'm enjoying that well enough for now, but I wouldn't want it to overstay its welcome and start overriding more organic and individual stories and feuds. Any thoughts as to the apparent confirmation that MJF's chip can be cashed in at will, like the Money in the Bank briefcase? It's not a huge deal to me, but AEW has generally avoided cheap or dirty title wins up until now, and as much as MJF is already an all-time heel, I do think his first title reign needs to be cemented by credible in-ring performances as well as devious conniving.
I don't know about that. Like, MJF winning in that style, I think does work for the character that I think you can, like, like, years down the road, you can do the big babyface run for MJF. Like, whenever that, there is a time to do that, and there will be a time to do that. So for this, I would say the argument now is, like, kind of timing it out right of, I wouldn't want to take the title off Moxley so quickly, but at the same time, like, you're seeing this show very much built around MJF, and you do want to have this on your biggest star. But yeah, I mean, it's sort of become a trope now in like most, like, Impact does it, and WWE, like, they've just followed.
God, it's a trope that always works. It's like every year when the Money in the Bank comes around, like, we might not always like the person that's holding the briefcase, but any sort of cash in tease gets a huge reaction. And I think it's a wonderful plot device. Chris Jericho, like, did he create the concept of the ladder match or the cash in concept? Like, it was
him and Brian Gewurz that came up with the Money in the Bank
idea. I mean, it was, I think, one of the like brilliant WWE original creations. And I mean, I'm certainly not mad that AEW is picking it up, because I think under MJF, you can build some wonderful drama with every single one of these cash ins. I think the problem comes with the way WWE books its Money in the Bank holders. How they job them week after week and after week, so that, you know, they establish themselves like really mid tier, and then all of a sudden they just ascend to, like, you know, world title. MJF is already at like a world title contention level, and we know in ring he can prove himself. Like, we know he's legitimate. So him winning through like a dirty tactic like that, I don't think at all like takes away from his legitimacy and credibility as a potential champion, because, you know, the follow up, I'm sure, will come with him like proving himself. I look forward to, like, you know, how AEW will treat the plot device and seeing what creativity they can achieve with it.
Yeah, and then the question becomes, after Moxley and Hangman, of like how you promote Full Gear. Like, do you just go with Moxley and MJF? Do you do it where MJF is still in the shadows with this chip? That is what you would assume would headline Full Gear, but we will see if they have other options. Last one here is from Chris in Ottawa. This episode of Dynamite was just kind of there. No big surprises. Some feuds continued, but it didn't feel like must-watch TV like most Dynamites. Do either of you know who declares days like National Scissoring Day? It makes me wonder why there isn't a National Post Wrestling Day or National WH Park Day. I think that's most days.
That would have been yesterday for the man's birthday. Big 5-0 for the man. So happy birthday, WH.
Neither of those make any less sense. A classic Nate Milton 6 out of 10. Jays lost tonight as Aaron Judge hit home run number 61, but the Rays lost too, so Toronto maintains their lead in the top wild card spot. The Mariners look to gain ground on both. They're ahead 3-1 versus Texas in the 7th. Bottom of the 7th in Seattle, two outs. Dylan Moore at the plate with the Mariners. One ball, one strike. Here's the pitch, dot, dot, dot. I love the running commentary that we're getting from Chris in Ottawa.
Follow the feedback thread if you want. He updated it, John.
Damn, he hit it to the warning track.
Okay.
So I guess that's the third out.
Thank you, Chris, for
the
ongoing.
To the top of the 8th we go. Do you want to stick around for the rest of the game?
We could just watch the feedback thread and have Chris continue to update us. Sure.
Yeah, that will boy, will we see a third hour drop if that happened here.
Three outs, we're going to the 8th, he says. All right.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. You can now turn on to the Seattle game if you are so inclined. But we are done. So we're going to say goodbye to everyone. Thanks to everyone for joining us live, sending in your super chats, your feedback, cafe members, non-cafe members, people that steal our show, people that don't listen to our show. We thank those people as well. You'll find us eventually.
That is correct. Again, subscription billing now on the Patreon, so you could sign up at any time. Don't wait for the first of the month if you want to listen to this week's Ask Away. John and I went 90 minutes asking a lot of your questions, some very great, some incredibly weird, like what is the softest thing you own, John?
You can find out. $6 a month. U.S.
We welcome it all.
Access to that show and 116 editions of Rewind Away. You can sign up and have those at your fingertip immediately. You can just go right into it. And boy, isn't it handy to have a post at forum.postwrestling.com going through all of the Rewind Away episodes in chronological order. How handy does it get?
Yeah, some people might not even be aware, but free to sign up at forum.postwrestling.com. You can go to the Rewind Away archive, where John Pollock has painstakingly compiled every single one of our shows for Rewind Away in chronological order. So you can go through the task of listening to all 100. How many, John? How many are we up at? 16?
116.
Goodness, wow. Also, shout out the archivist, always updating the stats here, including show ratings, which we
sometimes
probably
remember, sometimes we forget, and
I don't
drives
think we
them nuts.
Yeah, I don't think we... okay, well, anyway, maybe we stopped at some point. We'll update the archivist a bit, but the archivist always putting in great work at forum.postwrestling.com.
What do you give this show that we just did?
This podcast or Dynamite?
The podcast.
Fuck. 30 out of 10.
30? Oh my goodness. Okay. Yeah. So we're breaking your calculator. This was a good one. I thought the news, we had a good discussion. The Malachi Black stuff was an interesting discussion about coverage. And then
getting a handle on these graphics, you know, like I'm doing two things at once. So apologies if like I'm kind of distracted at times, but I'm getting used to it.
It's okay. I'm used to you listening with one ear to my rambling. So I appreciate that as always. And all of you, Thursday night, MCU Later with Rich Fan and the birthday man himself, WH Park. It's always WH Park Day here at Post Wrestling.
Man, they're going to be talking about, have you heard about this, John? The return of Hugh Jackman?
Oh, I did hear about this. I watched the video of the reveal that Hugh Jackman is Deadpool 3. He's going to be in.
Yeah. Cool. A Disney produced Deadpool 3. It's incredible.
Yeah. I thought it was a cool reveal the way they did it with the video. So that's great news that they will be discussing on Thursday night. Friday, Way and I are live 11 Eastern for Rewind to SmackDown, going over 1 hour of Rampage and 2 hours of SmackDown. Saturday, we'll have the long and winding Royal Road with Mr. Park himself, joined by Gareth Hodgson from Grapple to chat. The Malenkos, Joe and Dean, taking on Davey Boy Smith and Tom Billington in All Japan, January of 1989. And then the week rounds out with WrestleNomics Radio on Sunday. PostWrestling.com is your home. And that concludes Rewind to Dynamite. Good night.